Hello, my name is Marcel van der Hoef and you're listening to a podcast from Morningstar Benelux. In this podcast, I'll talk you through the highlights of Morningstar's 9th annual debate, which took place on December 1st in the Johan Cruyff Arena in Amsterdam. The topic, how to put ESG in practice. 2021 has been a huge year for sustainable investing, and one of the biggest events has been the implementation of the Sustainable Finance Disclosure Regulation in March. We are about 9 months in, the perfect moment to discuss what's working, what's not, and what can be done to make it work for asset managers and investors. This debate features four leading industry experts. Marcia Zandbergen, Head of Sustainability Integration at Robeco. San Lee, Head of Portfolio Management at ASN Impact Investors. Casper Hoekstra, Senior Supervision Officer Asset Management at AFM, the Dutch Authority for the Financial Markets. And Samia Jimeli, Lead Sustainability Analyst, Manager Research at Morningstar. We started the debate by discussing the original intention of SFDR. It's disclosure regulation, so it's aimed at making sustainable investing more transparent for clients. But are we getting anywhere? Let's listen to San Lee from ASN Impact Investors.
Yeah, I think looking forward, let's say, we're definitely getting somewhere. I think the bigger aim, of course, of the Commission is to channel more investments into sustainable investing, which I think is a very good thing, coming from a very sustainable investment house, of course. But I think the fact that the regulator is really asking us as a sector to provide more clarity on what we're aiming to do and whether we're really delivering and how we measure it. I mean, there are a lot of good things. And so I really hope that with, let's say, the more guidance that we hopefully will get in the next few months, years, we can do this. And that's, of course, the other part, the end investor, that for them, it's going to be more clear, like, what are they investing in? Because now I mentioned greenwashing and there's many examples. I'm not going to give any names. I want to just give one example, and that's we ourselves recently launched a new fund, the Biodiversity Fund, which is really focusing on recovery and restoration of nature. So we invest in forestry, in agriculture, in ecotourism. So really sectors that are really helping and having a positive impact. But I was looking at some of our competitors that also have a biodiversity fund, and this is not a joke, but one of them is heavily invested in Disney. Well, for me, as a sustainable investor, I start to wonder. I mean, I know they have, animals in their movies, but that cannot be, So hopefully this will really also help the end investor to know what they're investing in.
Mm. Marcia, do you recognize this?
I agree partly. I think there are three elements to this. I mean, the transparency, becoming more precise in telling what you are doing. That's the first step. Second step is, what are the outcomes then? What type of portfolio do you have? What kind of investments? That's quite important. And I think, this regulation is really helping to do that. But I would like to make a distinction between institutional investors and retail investors, because I think institutional investors will get much more information, also specifically with all the regulation on the principled first impact indicators, taxonomy alignment, sustainable investments. That's going to give them much more information, and that's good, because they can really, they can really distinguish between all of the types of information and they understand what it means. But a retail investor, I wonder, because, a carbon emission of a fund, you have to relate that to something. And all of the elements, it has to be relatable. So I do see a role also for Morningstar, for example, here, because things like Morningstar Globes or Fable Fin Label, those are just stamps that are easy to understand for retail investors. So I was thinking maybe as an idea, the principal at first impact indicators could be used as some kind of ranking as well in terms of how sustainable a fund is. And then the third part is, I think we had to distinguish between Article 8 and Article 9. I think sometimes it's used as green and darker green, but I would say I don't think we should use it like that. I think the articles are more what is appropriate for which client, because some clients are just not as far advanced as others, so they would probably be very happy to invest in Article 8. I do see that there are clients that don't want to invest in Article 6 funds anymore, and I understand that. But I wouldn't use it as a yeah, a level of dark or green or greener or not. I think, yeah, we need to look at what is appropriate. And again, there is a role for another party, I think, to play, to translate that into kind of like a stamp or for the retail investor.
Can I add, because I fully agree. At the same time, I must say, having worked at Morningstar and knowing that, for example, the stars added, I think, still are the most popular, let's say, ways of selecting a fund for a retail investor, despite the fact that the analyst ratings have been promoted and which are more forward-looking, is that I'm quite afraid that the end investor will just pick a fund based on this so-called stamp, which is not a stamp, but as we all know, but that's the way it's going to be perceived in the market. And I always say, same with stars or analyst rating, you should really look under the hood of what's happening, you know, whether a fund is called sustainable or not. You really have to look, even as an end investor, like, what is it investing in? And unfortunately, I think only the top 10, holdings of funds are being published on websites and fact sheets. But even that says a lot, you know. I mean, if I see a fund saying about themselves that they're sustainable, but they're investing in Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, and what have you, sorry, for me, that's not a sustainable fund.
Yeah, if I can build on what was just said right now, I think, first of all, with regards to Morningstar role, I agree. That's what we want to do. We want to educate investors, because that's part actually of the solution to greenwashing. More disclosure on your side and more education from all the key players in the field. And to come back to your remark about how it's important not to just to take one rating, I completely agree with that. SFDR is a positive thing for investors as well, retail investors, in the sense that it gives them a signal. They know that now Article 8 funds or Article 9 funds are strategies that claim to have ESG characteristics or sustainable goals. But they need to definitely go beyond that. And one role that we can play, us and other third-party provider, is to provide data sets, provide ratings, provide analysis that will be combined by the end investor, regardless of the level of professional knowledge, if I can put it that way, to understand and get a good understanding and a nuanced understanding of what's happening at the fund level, and whether what is presented to them is actually what's happening at the portfolio level. And yeah, looking at the holdings is something to do, carrying out in depth, if I can say, due diligence, even if you're a retail investor, just trying to go through the prospectus and try to see what is advertised in terms of investment objective. You can go on websites of third-party providers or our website, where you will find different ratings. And all of these pieces will allow you to understand what's happening and hopefully also gain knowledge in terms of ESG approaches, because there is a wide variety of ESG implementations and ESG strategies. And understanding that also helps investors steer away from greenwashing, because they would know that maybe having a light exclusions for a fund is not a way to gain exposure actually to real sustainable investments.
That was Samya Zimali from Morningstar. As she said, for SFDR to be a success, investors need to look beyond the classifications. But as Masha Zandbergen from Robeco and Sun Lee from ASN Impact Investors said, that's not always the case. What's more, the system is based on self-classification, and some asset managers are more conservative than others. In a report that was released in September, AFM, the Dutch Authority for the Financial Markets, said asset managers still have some room for improvement. Kasper Hoekstra from AFM explains what he means.
Well, I think in a positive note, we did, of course, our research, and one of the observations was that, at least on the basis of the information requests we sent out, is that all asset managers did make amendments to their prospectus in order to comply with the SFDR level one, at least where they deemed necessary by the managers. So in that respect, there was information added. Of course, we had some observations with respect to the quality of the information, but also, and I think that's an important point that Marcia just mentioned about the green and dark green, it's being perceived that Article 9 is sort of the greater good, but I think, and that's something we have some concerns is that the classifications are sort of witnessed as a quality mark with respect to sustainability. And in our opinion, of course, some products will fall out of scope of Article 9. But the question is that a bad thing? So I think indeed, I think it's important to know that the classification is the result of the characteristics of your product and the way you choose to promote those characteristics or objectives. And the SFDR is a framework how to report given your classification. I think if that's applied in the right way, then it surely should help also the end investors.
It should help, but it's not helping yet, as I get it from the table.
Yeah, we have since 2018 already our own classification because we understand that there is a need for a better classification. And actually, Article 8 is so wide that we have a classification of three types. There's sustainability inside, so that's more ESG integration engagement, and then the real sustainable funds with sustainable in the name, and then the more impact-related, so thematic, SDGs, climate funds. And actually, the first two categories are Article 8. So we believe that there's still, it doesn't fit our own classification yet. And I see this three-step classification with more asset managers. I don't know if you have any views on that, but the Article 8 categorization seems to be very broad.
It's broad. I mean, I think there is being looked at potentially adding some standards to Article 8 products, maybe to address that specific issue. But we indeed agree that currently the definition is quite broad.
And if I may add to this, there is a wide range of implementation depending on asset managers. So we speak to various asset managers that have either like you at Robeco, they came up with their own classifications and they have been very conservative in the way they've assigned Article 8 and Article 9 classifications. But there were also some asset managers that were a little bit more generous and took a little bit of liberty in terms of classifying their funds. And what, for instance, at Robeco or other asset managers has been classified as an Article 8 fund, has been classified as an Article 9 fund at another asset manager. So this is a little bit confusing, and I agree that the classifications are very wide and it's difficult to navigate the definitions. But there were different levels of interpretations that led to different levels of classifications.
Yeah. So if there's so much room for interpretation, where's the big problem? Should the regulation be changed or should it be made more specific? What fits Category 8, Casper?
Well, I think the definition for Article 9 is quite strict and quite
clear.
But Article 8, that may be a broader scope, but then it's more the discussion is, does this product qualify as an Article 8 product or Article 6 product? I think there are several criteria that you can check whether you should report as an Article 8 product or not. I'm not sure if that's... You only could argue that the definition of Article 8 is so large that maybe it's too large. That's not a discussion, I think, but I think the criteria are quite clear.
Yeah, Article 6, Article 8, Article 9. The general tone of the debate was that SFDR is an important step in the right direction, but more needs to be done to make it work for investors. It's a lot of work. Robeco's Mascha Zandbergen explains how all of this is putting a burden on the asset management industry.
I think there's lots of time spent on implementing this regulation. Well, that goes for every new regulation that is so encompassing as this one, that it takes a lot of time and effort. And of course, that time and effort, if we have a project group on principal adverse impact indicators or on taxonomy alignment, there are specialists in there that are SI research people, that are active ownership people, that are legal people. Yeah, these people don't have time then to do research into all of those companies that we invest in and how sustainable are they. So there is a trade-off. So that's why I say I don't hope it's going to take too long, because then, I want these people to do the research.
What is it costing you then? Like, not in terms of money, but what do you have to leave because you focus on
Yeah, it's time. It's people's time. We are investing a lot of time and effort in as expertise on sustainability. We have a center of 46 people now. Any minute they spend on implementing the regulation, they don't spend on doing research or engaging with companies. Yeah. That's what it's costing us.
So it sounds like it's a really costly operation. Robeco is a pretty big firm. You're a little bit smaller. How do you deal with this?
I fully recognize it. And indeed, we're much smaller. So indeed, in our case, also very often the same people that should be doing research or should make portfolio decisions that are now looking into this legislation and the impact it has. So definitely next to, and let's say in addition to all the external support that we, whether it's a lawyer, a law firms or consultants, it's indeed our own staff that is now, well, I wouldn't say full time, but
I hope not.
Quite a lot of their time putting effort into it. I mean, on balance, it's costing us time and efforts and resource right now. I think the bigger picture still is for us that, it's a good initiative. In the end, it will help the sector. I think especially for the laggards, as managers that did not do anything yet or just very minimalistic, the fact that they also, not only the ESG or SRI teams, but also the fund managers and the IT people and data people, everybody is now busy with sustainability. I think that in the end is a very good thing.
Yeah. There's a question.
I agree.
There's a question from the viewers actually about the impact on the industry from the increased workload. It's a pretty long one. We're seeing an ongoing rise in the cost of regulation as we just discussed. It's direct in terms of fees. It's indirect, increased workload, as we just discussed. As a result, and I think this is the core of the question, small players are being pushed out, resulting in consolidation and fewer choices for clients. Shouldn't we make sure regulations are truly fit for purpose and easy to implement before they are being introduced? I think, Casper, this might be a question for you.
Yes. I mean, it's of course a justified concern. In recently, AFM addressed this issue, and I think put it in a more broader perspective that we witnessed several factors that may drive consolidation, and that are of course the increasingly complex regulatory framework is one of them, but also other factors such as margin pressures and the trend towards passive investments. So yes, it's of course we acknowledge that this implementation that this requires a huge effort from the whole industry, and I think it's a fair point. If it depends probably your starting point where you were before this SFDR came into perspective. So yeah, of course it's a development we will monitor, and we understand that this puts pressure on the especially the smaller firms.
A monitor? Is there anything you can do about it?
No, I mean there is of course some proportionality in the package. It's not on every requirement, but there are some requirements that are dependent on the nature, skill, and complexity of your activities. Of course, there's the current 500 employee threshold. So there are some elements, of course, with the deliberate purpose of making it proportional. But I think there are sufficient requirements that will apply to everyone. And that's a consequence of the implementation of such a big package.
Yeah, but still, asset managers are feeling the burden. Otherwise, this question would not have been asked. And the question was also like, shouldn't you just postpone regulation so the industry has time to adapt?
We are postponing, but for different reasons. So maybe not everybody is at the same level with on the extensions. But then you can wait for a very long time. I mean, I don't think it's a fair point to say that this legislation is coming too early. There's a good reason for this legislation, and I don't think postponing would be the answer.
I do understand the point of having less supply or less choice. We've heard that also, for example, in the Belgian market when they introduced the Fabelfin, the label. But in practice, we've seen that many asset managers still, because of business reasons want to be there. So they will do the work and they will make sure that they will apply the regulation or the label or whatever, because otherwise it's going to cost them business. So I'm not afraid. Yeah, maybe you can.
Yeah, no, please.
I'm not afraid that there will be less choice. There's a lots of choice. Mm-hmm. So maybe you have a better view on that than I do.
Actually, from what we see, the offering that have been made available, the sustainable offers that have been made available to investors after SFDR has actually increased. So current asset, the part about merger and acquisition, I cannot speak to because I'm not part of the industry. But I can tell you that asset managers have been launching funds that are sustainable, classified as Article 8 or 9. They have been also repurposing heavily funds after SFDR came into force in March. I think year to date, there were more than 3,100 funds that have been repurposed in Europe. And that's like a staggering level compared to previous levels that were around 100 yearly. So that gives you an idea that asset managers have seized that opportunity to basically expand the range of offering that they have made available to investors to capture the flows that sustainable funds are attracting. And maybe just circling back to the first idea about how the burden is put on asset managers, I would say it's a heavy weight that the asset managers are lifting because a lot is asked from them. But to put that in perspective, I would say they really can move the needle and help transition the economy towards a circular economy and a more sustainable economy, because they have power that other economic actors don't have, maybe. So through their stewardship, basically, and fiduciary duty, they have voting power, and they can, as we said earlier, really change things at the level of the companies they're invested in. They have the money, obviously. They invest, they can redirect funds and allocate them to better solutions or to specific sustainable solutions, like companies that are active in the biodiversity sector. And finally, they really owe it to their clients to be transparent about what they're doing. So it's a heavy weight, but it's heading in the right direction. And examples of good practices and asset managers that do walk the walk and do the job are there. There are obviously some laggards as well, but it's a positive step.
You listen to the highlights from Morningstar's annual debate on December 1st, featuring Masha Zandbergen from Robeco, San Lee from ASN Impact Investors, Casper Hoekstra from the Dutch Authority for the Financial Markets, and Samia Jimeli from Morningstar. If you want to learn more, please visit the EU Sustainable Finance Action Plan Resources Hub or watch the full debate at your convenience. You can find the links in the show notes of this podcast. With that being said, thank you for listening and see you next time.